Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You're just in time to talk a little bit of college football, some old-time college football, and get into the very beginnings of college conferences. We have Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com to tell us all about it in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to Tuesday, footballarchaeology.com day. And we visit with Timothy P. Brown of that great website to visit with one of his tidbits, and he can entertain us with some great football lore. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you as always. Looking forward to chatting. And I think we begin with the finest football conference ever created.
That would be a good thing to say with us that live up here up north. Perhaps somebody in the south or somebody out west or other parts of the country may disagree with us. But
I'm also, you know, this is a history podcast. So, you know, I'm talking about the breadth, the length of college football history. I think it's fairly easy to make that case.
And since at the time of this recording, that conference, the Big Ten, has won the last two national championships. So I guess that gives them some credibility for the modern times, too. So yeah. This is a conversation is based on Tim's tidbit titled The Big Ten's Coming and Goings that you came out recently with. What can you tell us about this story, Tim?
Yeah, you know, to me, it was just you know, there's so much turmoil, you know, in college football today, you know, with NIL and the portal and, you know, I mean, talk about comings and goings. And, you know, I think in I always kind of perceived the Big Ten and, you know, the SEC, you know, like as I was growing up, those were like steady state conferences. So was the Pac-10. And so was the ACC and the Big Eight and the Southwest. You know, those were all still there. And, you know, but kind of one after another, you know, different ones have fallen by the wayside and rejiggered and reconstituted themselves. And so, you know, now we've ended up with these conglomerations of the Big Ten and the SEC and then these other conferences. You can't even tell, you know, it's like, you know, you need a program to know who the players are. You know, when you come into a stadium, it's like you need a program to know who's in what conference nowadays. But nevertheless, you know, I just thought, it was kind of just an opportunity to take a look at, you know, how did the Big Ten evolve, right? And, you know, it really was, I mean, we get the term conference from their initial conference of faculty members. You know, that's where that word comes from. And, you know, which like back in 1896, I think they did another little thing in 1892. But nevertheless, I mean, there were, you know, like seven members of what's currently the Big Ten, well, plus Chicago, that were part of the original group. And then a couple years later, they added Indiana and Purdue, I think in 1899. And then things were kind of, you know, they had their set of teams, and then Michigan bolts, you know, in like 1907, they're gone. You know, they go off in the wilderness for 10 years. In the meantime, Ohio State comes in. Michigan returns, you know, just before World War I. And so then, you know, you've got the 10 conference teams. And so, but all along there was like Nebraska at times, you know, they like applied a couple times to join, and they could never quite get over the gate. Notre Dame applied once or twice, but, you know, there were reasons that they didn't get in. And, you know, a lot of people say it was Fielding Yost and, you know, being anti-Catholic or whatever. But, you know, there was already Northwestern was a private school, so, you know, couldn't have been really the private school thing. Anyways. And then, you know, over the years, Pitt was a potential member. You know, they got mentioned a few times. But, you know, one of the things in kind of going back and looking at this again, one of the things I'd forgotten about, I know I'd learned it before, but, you know, in the 30s, there was a point where Chicago and Northwestern had talks about merging, you know, so both schools would have stayed in the Big Ten, but they would have just been one school. Right. And so, which was just kind of an interesting thing. And actually when that was happening, there was discussion of both Pitt and Michigan State joining the Big Ten. You know, like if that merger happened, well, maybe there's an opening for another school. And so they were the kind of the two candidates, but you know, that didn't happen. Well, the merger didn't happen. And then Chicago leaves the Big Ten just before, you know, World War II. And it's not until like 50 that Michigan State joins, but they don't play football until I think it was 53, maybe 54 season. And then we sit there, you know, then it's like, okay, we're cool. We got our conference. We had the thing with the big, well, the Pac-8 playing in the Rose Bowl every year. It was like Nirvana. You know, I mean, as a kid growing up, that was like, it's, you know, us cold Midwesterners and those, you know, fancy pants people out on the West Coast. Right. And hopefully we were able to ground them down each year and beat them, but we didn't. So, anyways, you know, to me, that was kind of the fun of the regional conferences. There's something fun about that. Or at least it seemed so at the time. And then, you know, for just the whole shift in, you know, there's a lot of things that facilitated or caused these conferences to reshape. And, you know, number one was television money, you know, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, it just made sense to get into, especially in the early days of cable, it made sense to get into certain markets. So now all of a sudden Penn State joins, you know, allowing this kind of semi-Eastern team into our fine Midwestern conference. It's kind of a scandal.
We weren't too happy about it here either.
Yeah, I know. Well, little did you know.
We liked our two independent teams in Pennsylvania with Pitt and Penn State.
And then there was the, you know, then obviously Nebraska comes in, eventually Maryland and Rutgers. And then now the most recent, you know, with the four West Coast teams. So it's just kind of an interesting little tour through time. I'm probably going to do another one. It's interesting to me, you know, back much earlier, like in the, you know, starting in the 1890s, maybe into the 1930s or so, the Southern Conference was this huge conference. You know, it had like 30 some teams, you know, anything from Sewanee to, you know, Alabama and whatnot. And then it broke up into the SoCon and, you know, the SEC and part of it to ACC. So that's been a whole interesting, you know, dynamic in the South. I mean, again, I think of the SEC as a stable organization, and it has been, you know, for well more than my lifetime. But it wasn't always so, right? And so it's just kind of an interest, you know, I just think all the conferences tell you a lot about what was going on in football, right? And the pressures, both the, you know, academic and eligibility standards, and more than anything, the money involved in the transportation technologies that allow you to play teams that are more distant than in the past, you know.
Yeah, it's just really interesting how it was so regionalized. You know, I know it's probably, you know, for travel reasons, and you don't want teams too far away when before you're getting on airplanes and things like that. But, you know, like the Big Ten is a perfect example. It was basically the northern Midwest is really what it was. You know, Pennsylvania wasn't in it. You know, Ohio State was what, the first Eastern team, I believe.
Yeah.
And that furthest Western team, I don't even know.
Minnesota.
Or Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all tight little bundle there of everybody, you know, there's, you know, three or four or five states right there by the Great Lakes, the Western Great Lakes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, even when they, you know, like the Big Ten and really all the conferences initially were formed more as, you know, kind of eligibility and standards and that kind of thing rather than as a scheduling mechanism. And so the, you know, like the Big Ten, for a long time, I mean, really almost until World War II, you know, it wasn't uncommon for a conference champ to have only played three conference games. You know, I mean, Minnesota claims like 57 conference championships. And I don't like Minnesota because I'm a Wisconsin fan. But, you know, I mean, like four of their conference championships, and I think that's right, maybe even more, they only won two conference games. You know, but, oh, hey, we're the, you know, we were the conference champions. Well, yeah, they were under the rules of the time, and yeah, fine. But, you know, like in the the Southern Conference, same thing. They didn't have the rail networks even there to get from, you know, Tennessee to Alabama or whatever. You know, I mean, I'm making that one up, but, you know, it was not easy to get from, you know, from one school in the conference to the other. So they, a lot of them just never played one another. You know, they could go decades without playing. So, you know, and like Wisconsin would play Minnesota and Iowa, Northwestern and Chicago. And then other years they'd pick, you know, they'd pick up somebody, but they hardly ever played Ohio State. You know, I mean, it just because it was so far away.
Yeah.
You know, and they played little, you know, the tiny little conferences or tiny little, you know, liberal arts schools and stuff. So.
Yeah. And it's also interesting, you know, I live, you know, more towards the east, and I even had a high school coach, a grade school coach that would always call, you know, Ohio and Michigan out west, you know, and that was, it was the Western Conference for a while. That's what everybody called it before, you know, I think the Big Ten really caught on to what it is today, you know, name-wise. And it's just interesting, you know, now we look at it like, well, there's a lot of teams further west than that, you know, so.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the, I did an article, this is probably 3-4 years ago now, but, you know, the schools, that state schools that had their, had a football program before they were states, you know, so, I mean, you know, time, you know, the times were a little different back then.
Hey, we have a lot of state schools here, and we're not even a state, we're a commonwealth.
Yeah, well, so is Kentucky and probably a couple other places, but.
No, there's three. Kentucky, Pennsylvania.
And I'm gonna guess.
Oh wait, maybe there's four. I'm sorry, there's four.
I don't want to. Well, Virginia, right?
Virginia, you're right. I believe Massachusetts is a commonwealth too.
Okay.
So
what's the difference?
I have no idea. we like to use more letters of the alphabet. I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know the difference either. So.
But they still have, you know. It happens all the time. Our politicians here, you know, oh, here's our state flag. Well, technically, we're not a state. Shouldn't it be our Commonwealth flag? So,
yeah.
Who knows? I think they're intermingled and synonymous with each other anymore. At least in our states, they are.
Right. Well, it's a conference, not a league. So remember that too.
Yeah, that's true. True. But I didn't realize that till I read your article, and you're again saying it here today, where the word conference came from. So that's interesting. And they even use it in the professional levels and other sports too. So interesting. Good stuff.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of interesting subject matters like this that, you know, people may say every day, like the word conference and you know, Big Ten, and we really don't think about where those come from. But you like to dive into that stuff with your tidbits and give us a short little story and learn, educate us on something about football. And maybe you could share with the listeners where they too can partake in some of your tidbits.
Yep. Just catch me on footballarchaeology.com. You know, it's a Substack site, so you can subscribe and you'll get an email every day that I send out or publish a new story. Otherwise, just follow me, you know, save the site or follow me on Substack app. You can also follow me on Blue Sky. So that's how you figure out what I'm doing and what I'm writing about.
All right. Well, Tim, we appreciate what you're doing and what you're writing about and coming and visiting us here each Tuesday. And we'd love to talk to you again next week. And we thank you for today.
Always fun. Thanks, dear.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.